Okay. You can with it. Improve with it. All right. So anyway, Matthew 14 is a very nice to us. Matthew 14, we have Jesus fed the 5 loaves ish, and now he goes up into the mountains by himself to pray. Matthew chapter 14, verse 23, says when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up into the mountain by himself to pray. And he sent the disciples out into the boat, sent the disciples out into a boat by themselves. So they're crossing the Sea of Galilee. And it says, but the boat was already far from land, buffeted by waves because the wind was against it. So Jesus is up in the mountain praying, and we have the disciples in the boat, and the wind is contrary, and it's a great struggle to them to keep on going. So very early in the morning, Jesus came to his disciples walking on the lake. Luke calls Matthew calls it the lake here. We call it the Sea of Galilee, but it really was a lake. And when the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. What would you do if you were out there in a boat in the middle of a storm and all of a sudden some guy comes walking across the water to you? I mean, you'd be scared too, wouldn't you? Yeah, I would be. I said, whoa, I've never seen that before. Whoa. So they were terrified and they said, it's a ghost. And they were so frightened, they screamed. And just then Jesus spoke to them and said, be encouraged, it's me. Don't be afraid. I don't know how many times Jesus does that in the Gospels where people are afraid. He says, wait, it's just me, don't be afraid. Does Jesus want us to be afraid of him? He says, it's not me, nothing to be afraid of. Don't be afraid, it's me. So he's walking to them on the water. And they're frightened, terrified by it. And as he comes in, he's doing something nobody's ever done before, isn't he? Who ever heard of somebody walking on the water? That never been heard of. But they're walking right to them and they're terrified. Somebody has pointed out that there's 300, I haven't counted them, but somebody says the phrase fear not is found 365 times in the Bible. There's one for every day of the year. You can just get one of those verses every day of the year and you'll have something to remind you not to be afraid. So now besides Jesus walking on the water, if the Jesus lizard walks on the water, right? You've seen the Jesus lizard? Ones that went across the water? That's why they're called Jesus lizards, because they walk on the water running across. The only other man to do that was Peter. And Peter says, Lord, if it's you, command me to come to you on the water. If it's really you, Lord, tell me to come on out here and I'll walk out there to you. Now, we sometimes pick on Peter as being, you know, he's impetuous and he sank when he went out there and all those kind of things. But was there anybody else in the history of the world that got out and walked on the water besides Jesus and Peter? He's the only one that had the nerve to get out of the boat, wasn't he? Yeah. And so Jesus says, come. So Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came to Jesus. Wow. He got out of the boat and he walked over there walking to Jesus. He's doing real good, wasn't he? But when he saw the wind was strong, he was afraid, and he began to sink and cried out, saying, Lord, save me. Some of the Gospels say that he saw the wind and the waves. So as long as his eye was on Jesus, as long as he was focused on Jesus, everything went fine, didn't it? But when he started looking around and saying, ooh, it's pretty windy, oh, those waves are pretty high, when he started looking around his circumstances, he began to sink. And he had to cry out for Jesus to save him. Now, I really want us to think about that. When you're afraid in this world, when you look around at the economy and you look around at wars and you look around at all the things that were talked about in our prayer, all these things and the things Jaden was talking about in the Lord's Supper, you look around at all the trouble and things that are going on in this world, it's real easy to get distracted, isn't it? It's real easy to get discouraged. It's real easy to think, oh my goodness, what's going to happen next? How terrible is everything? The world's awful. When is Jesus coming back? We can start thinking about all those kinds of things. And the reason is because we took our eye off Jesus. If we focus just on him, I was talking to a guy the other day, he was telling me how bad everything was, and I said, you know what, I'm part of another kingdom, and I know that kingdom's not, this kingdom may shake, but that kingdom's not. And that one's ruled by Jesus, and God's not worried. You don't think God's in heaven pacing around saying, oh no, what am I going to do? Everything's so bad down on the earth. You think God sits around and paces and worries about what's going on the earth? He's in charge, isn't he? He can stop everything anytime he wants to, and he's not worried about it. And we just need to put our trust in him. There's all kinds of things can happen to us that scare us and frighten us. Health issues, economy, jobs, all kinds of things can do. But if we focus on Jesus, that's what I'm trying to get to today, in focusing on Jesus. So immediately Jesus stretched forth his hand and caught him and said to him, oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? When I was growing up, I always thought about that as being like Jesus. You're no good anyway here. Just go ahead and drown. I mean, I don't. It's like, you know, he's disgusted with him.
I don't think so. The more I think about that now, I think Jesus wasn't disgusted with him. He said, Peter, you did so good. What happened? You lost your focus. You lost your faith. You started doubting. What happened? I mean, you did so good. You had a good start, and you didn't finish. I think it was more of an encouraging thing. I imagine he took him by the arm, you know, lifted him up and carried him back to the boat. And I don't think Jesus was disgusted with him. I think he was disappointed. He didn't keep going. So Jesus reaches down and grabs him and rescues him, pulls him back out of the water. Somebody said, keep calm and fix your eyes on Jesus. Right? Keep calm and fix your eyes on Jesus. Or somebody else says, when you feel you're drowning in life situations, don't worry. Your lifeguard walks on water. We got reason to have hope, don't we? I mean, what was the problem Peter had? He doubted. He was afraid. What's the solution to doubt? Faith. What's the solution to fear? Faith. What's the solution to worry? Faith. Right? So if we're having those problems, we have a lack of faith. We've been studying on Sunday morning in Hebrews about the importance of faith and examples of people who walk by faith. So when they got to the boat, the wind ceased, the storm was over, and everybody was safe. Let's focus on Jesus, not on the storm. That's a lesson that Christians need to learn, because the world is not looking up, focusing on Jesus. And you're going to stand out as being very different if your eye is on him instead of the circumstances. So I want to talk today about fixing our eyes on Jesus. And I'm getting that from Hebrews chapter 12, 1 and 2, which we were studying in Bible class this morning. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. He calls upon us when we're struggling in life, when we're needing to endure the problems, the persecutions, the illnesses, the losses, the things that are worrying and bothering us, the things that are discouraging us and causing us to lose faith and to doubt and to worry and to potentially quit. Look to Jesus. He's the author and finisher of our faith. He's been through something worse than you could ever imagine. There's no way you'll ever go through what Jesus went through. And yet he endured. Because of the joy set before him, he was looking to the future. Looking to what was going to happen in the future. And that's what caused him to endure and keep right on going. So he says we're surrounded by a cloud of witnesses. But I think he's referring to those people of Hebrews chapter 11 that he's given as a roll call of faith. This Hall of Fame of Faith, as some people call it. And then he says here, we're surrounded by this cloud of witnesses that we can look at all the time for encouragement when we need it. Say, this guy made it, that guy made it, that guy finished the race, that guy didn't quit. We can look at all those guys and be encouraged by their faith. And then he says, let us strip off every weight and that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily trips us up. Now that's a paraphrase of Hebrews 12 verse 1. But let us strip off every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily trips us up. How many of us are walking around with a ball and chain around our neck? How many people are carrying a knapsack full of rocks around with us everywhere we go, wearing us out, dragging us down? When you get ready for a race, you ever notice when people get ready for a race, what do? They strip off the warm-ups. They you know, sometimes take off their shoes. They do whatever they can. If they had a toga on or something, they pull it up and tuck it into their waistband. I mean, you want to get rid of all the encumbrances, all the hindrances, everything that gets in your way. You want to get rid of those things. Get them off because you want free movement. Now you think about swimmers and stuff today. What do? They shave all the hair off their body and they put on nylon and stuff and they cover the hair. Anything they could do to save 1/100th of a second, they're going to do because the race is so important to them. So lay aside every weight and the sin that would so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race. Let's run that race and keep on with it. There's a race to be run, and a victory to be won. And we got to lay aside every weight to do that. So what kind of weights, what have you laid off? What kind of weight have you laid off in the last year? What's been hindering you, holding you back? You said, I got to get rid of that. And you got rid of it. Now, he's not talking about sins necessarily. You see, the weights, he talks about sin later. But he's talking about just weights. This thing holds you down. What's blocking you, holding you back, tying you down? It could be things about your job. It could be hobbies. It could be neighbors. It could be anything. whatever it is that's hindering you, you need to get rid of it, as well as the besetting sins. You know, it seems like everybody's got kind of a besetting sin, don't they? Most everybody has one sin that's particularly hard for them. Oh, I don't have a problem with that one or that one or that one. This is the one I have a problem with. So whatever that besetting sin is, I've got to get rid of that too. And he said, it's time to lay down the weight that's holding you back. And only you know what that is, but I hope you'll think about that. I think, what am I dragging around with me that if I just dropped it, my life would be a whole lot easier and simpler. It'd be a whole lot easier to follow the Lord without dragging that thing around. You see, there's going to be obstacles in your way, right? You clear the path before you get out there to run. You want to clear the path, get things out of the way. If it stops you from getting closer to God, then it needs to go. Would you agree with that? No matter what it is, if it stops you from getting closer to God, it needs to go. Lay it aside. Get rid of it. You're serious about running a race. You're not going to drag everything you own with you when you run a suitcase with you and everything else when you're running a race. You get rid of things that will hold you down. So don't trip over something behind you. I always like that one there. How many people trip over the past? Don't trip over something behind you. You get the past messing you up. And also don't worry about the future. Worry never robs tomorrow of its sorrow. It only saps today of its joy. So what good is worry going to be for you? Don't let the past, don't let the future interfere. Focus on the present and doing things right now. How many of us today are addicted to distraction? Things distract us constantly. Keep us, we're always, can't focus on the one thing that's important because we're so distracted by chasing rabbits everywhere. We have weapons of mass distraction. A lot of weapons of mass distraction out there, aren't there? And they keep us from that. Somebody said that, what's the attention span of a goldfish? 8 seconds. 1 second longer than the typical human. Okay. And I'm trying to hold you for 30 minutes. Sorry about that. Oh, man. I really got my work cut out. Okay. But you know what? When you have a distraction, what if you get an eyelash caught in your eye or you get a little piece of sand or something caught in your eye? What's the only thing you can think about? Getting it out. You are totally distracted and preoccupied and focused on that until it's fixed, right? And how about if you're going along and doing it on the path and you get a pebble in your shoe? What's the only thing you can think about? If you're like me, you're walking another 10 miles with it in your shoe, but the best thing to do is stop and take your shoe off and shake it out and then move on because it's going to be a distraction to you. And there's distractions everywhere, keeping us away from running the race that God has given us to run. You remember Jesus telling the story about the parable of the soils, or that we call it the parable of the sower, the soils, the four different soils that the seed could fall into. And the third one's the one I really think most Christians need to focus most on, and that's the one, the thorny soil. He says, other seed fell among the thorns, which grew up and choked the plants. In Mark 4, he says, still others, like seed sown among thorns, hear the word, but the worries of this life, the deceitfulness of wealth, and the desires for other things come in and choke the word, making it unfruitful. I find that most Christians that I deal with problems and things, it's not they don't love the Lord. It's not they don't believe the Bible. It's not they don't care about the church. It's just, you know, you just don't know how many things I've got to do. I've got to get out there and get the weeds out of the yard. I've got to go change the oil in the car. I've got to go to this and that. I've got to travel this place and got that game and this performance. And we got this to do and that to do. I just don't have any time to pray. I don't have any time to read the Bible. I don't have any time to come to church. I'm just too many things going on. And it's not they're against them, but the weeds have choked it out. The weeds have choked it, and so you can't bear fruit. Galatians 5, verse 7, Paul says, you were running well. Who hindered you from obeying the truth? You were running well. What happened to you? In Galatians 2, verse 7, in order to make sure I was not running or had not run in vain, Paul said, I want to make sure I didn't run for no purpose and in vain. Don't run in vain. Don't run for no purpose. Don't run where you don't qualify. Philippians 2, verse 16, holding forth the word of life that I might rejoice in the day of Christ that I have not run in vain. Neither labored in vain. Paul wanted to make sure he hadn't run in vain or labored in vain. And we should feel the same way. In 1 Corinthians chapter 9, I think I'm in 9, yeah. In 1 Corinthians 9, verse 24, do you not know that in a race all runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run as to win. Run to win the prize. What? Run to win the race. Therefore, I do not run like somebody running aimlessly. He's not just wandering around and running in circles. I don't fight like a boxer beating the air. I'm not just shadow boxing. It's a real fight, a real race that he's involved in. He's talking about Olympics here, by the way. He's referring to Olympic races. But I discipline my body and keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified. Paul said, I got to run on purpose, run with a mission, run with a focus, because I don't want to get disqualified. I want to win the race. I want to get the crown. And he couldn't be distracted or held up from that. So we're told here again in Hebrews chapter 12, let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. We've been given a race. Jesus had a race. We've had a race. He ran his successfully. Now we need to run ours successfully. You see, the more Jesus we get, the less drama we have. The more less selfishness, complaining, bitterness, gossip, pride, anger. The less of me. He must increase, I must decrease, John the Baptist said about him, right? That was our theme a couple of years ago. I love Jim Rohn, a lot of things. He's a motivational speaker, but a lot of things he said are really great. He says, we suffer one of two things, either the pain of discipline or the pain of regret. You've got to choose your discipline. Choose discipline versus regret, because discipline weighs ounces and regret weighs tons. How many times, just take a student in school, for example. Somebody doesn't like school much, and they're not going to study, not going to work, they don't graduate, they can't get a job, and all that stuff. And the rest of their life, they're struggling, trying to make up. But if they had studied and done their tests and got their grades and got their diploma, and they had gotten their college education, and they'd have a good job, and so they'd have to struggle and work the pain of discipline right now to enjoy all the rewards that come later. But by not paying the pain of discipline now, they have the pain of regret later. The rest of their life, they're thinking, oh, I wish I'd done that. If I'd only done this, if I'd only done that, my life would be very different. Well, we have to make decisions. How many people are going to come before God in judgment day and say, oh, I just wish I had really thought about the Lord a lot more. I really wish I had prayed and studied the Bible. I wish I'd been a faithful Christian during all this year. How many people are going to be that way at the end? They're going to have the pain of regret and eternity for regret. Discipline is choosing between what you want now and what you want most. Think about that for a minute. Difference between what you want now versus what you want most. That means the importance of delayed gratification, right? Sometimes you have to put something off now in order to have something better later. And we're not that great at that, typically, at delaying our gratification. We want what we want now. In regard to, remember Esau we talked about this morning in Bible class? How he wanted that bowl of lentil soup? Was he willing to give away his whole future and his inheritance and everything else, give it all away for a bowl of soup? Pretty foolish, wasn't it? But a lot of us aren't much smarter than that. Jesus met with his good friends, Mary and Martha. And Martha complained because Mary was sitting at the feet of Jesus, studying, listening, and Martha was having to do all the housework. And Jesus says to her, Martha, Martha, you are worried and upset about many things, but only one thing is needed, and Mary has chosen the better, what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. You know, clean the house and cooking and all those kind of things are real important. They're needed. But are they more important than Jesus and his word? But we have people all the time that put their housework and all the other things ahead of serving the Lord. How many times on Sunday does somebody tell me, oh, we couldn't come today because, you know, we had visitors come in. We couldn't come today because I had to water the lawn. I couldn't come today because, you know, I had to go grocery shopping. Or I'm thinking, those are all good and fine things to do, but why are they more important than assembling with the saints? Something we all think about. We ought to have a Mary heart in a Martha world. Right? And focusing on God in the midst of busyness. Total focus is what we need to look at. What you magnify is what you get more of. You know that? What you focus on is what you get more of. A boy with a magnifying glass can start a fire with some leaves by focusing the attention of the sun down through that, magnifying that. Or burn the ants up or whatever they want. They can find lots of things to do. But you can take, everybody's learned that magnifying glass can create some real focused heat and can start a fire, can't it? You ever wonder why the lion tamer uses a four-legged stool to try to tame the lions? It's because the legs confuse the lion. He can't focus on, he's got too many things to focus on. He can't decide what to focus on. He's got too many things to look at. If he could focus, he might get you. But if you keep him distracted by moving that thing around, he's got too many things to watch, he can't focus and come after you. We need to focus on Jesus, don't we? Focus on Jesus. You take an Olympic athlete, a guy that wants to win the Olympic gold. How many years does he work, discipline his body, eating the right things, getting up at the right time, working hard, exercising. He's going to run a 10-second race or a 30-second race or a 5-minute race or something and try to get a gold necklace. And how much discipline does he go through to get that done? How focused is he? He said, hey, let's go out to the Circle K and hang out there and smoke a little pot and drink a little beer and all that. Why don't you come out there and we'll hang out until late tonight or something? What's he going to say? Ain't no way. I got to be bed early. I got to be up at 4 o'clock in the morning working out and getting ready to, you know, I got to get, I don't have time for this. I'm focused on what it is I want to win. James 1 verse 8 says a double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. A person can't make up his mind, it's unstable. Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, if your eye is single, your body will be whole. Single-mindedness, not double-mindedness. You can't serve two masters, right? You can't serve God and man. You can't serve two. You got to pick one or the other. Focus on one, not the other. You got to put treasure in heaven, not on the earth. There's so many things we're told. You got to do this and not that. Focus on this, not focus on that. Jesus said to a man who said he would follow him wherever he went, he said, no man having put his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom of God. Some of you that were old enough to go do some plowing when you were growing up, what happens if you look over your shoulder while you're plowing? You have a zigzag line, don't you? If you want a straight line, you got a point on the fence up there you got to look at, and you got to walk straight toward it. If you take your eyes off of it, same with driving. If you take your eyes off the road, what happens? Next thing you know, you're zagging and zigging and whatever on that. And then Jesus went on to say in Luke 17, verse 32, remember Lot's wife. Y'all remember Lot's wife? When they left Sodom and Gomorrah, they were told to leave and not look back. And she looked back longingly at what she was leaving and turned to a pillar of salt. And Jesus says, don't forget her. She looked back. Once you get going, don't look back. You need to finish the race that we start. Paul said he did that, and he finished well. 2 Timothy 2, 4, verses 6 through 8, he said, for I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure has come. I've fought the good fight. I've finished the race. I've kept the faith. Henceforth, there's laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but also to all who love his appearing. So Paul says here, I've fought the good fight, I've finished the race, I've kept the faith. Can we say the same thing as we finish our race? There's a really interesting story from back in the 1968 Olympics in Mexico. There was a fellow from Tanzania by the name of John Stephen Akwari, who was the marathon runner for them. And as he started the race, he ended up falling hard to the ground and he dislocated his knee. He's got to run 26, now I don't know about running 26 miles on the best of conditions, but he's got a dislocated knee. He actually continued to run the race. He finished 2 hours after everybody else was done. And they asked him, they said, why did you keep on running? You had a dislocated knee. I mean, how painful is that? You're hours out of, of finishing with everybody else. He said, I never thought of stopping. You know why? He said, my country didn't send me 5,000 miles to start the race. They sent me 5,000 miles to finish the race. I didn't go there to start. I go there to finish it. And he was going to finish the race no matter what. You know, Jesus had a race that he had to run too, didn't he? And he finished it no matter what. Even though going to Jerusalem meant gruesome death, he said, it's finished. He did it. 2 Corinthians 4:18. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen, since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. Where is your focus? We walk by faith or by sight? We walk by what we can see or what God tells us? Are you living for the unseen or the seen? For the eternal or the temporal? The here and now or the future? What are we living for? Paul would say in Philippians chapter 4, verse 8, finally, brethren, whatever things are true, noble, just, pure, lovely, and of good report, if there's any virtue, and if anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. Focus. Focus. How, you know, you can only think one thought at a time. And if you're thinking about things that are true, noble, just, pure, lovely, and good report, and so forth, how much can you focus on all the bad things of this world and how miserable you are and unhappy you are and your worry and your anger and your bitterness? How can you focus on those things if you're focused on these things? You can only focus on one thing at a time. What are you focusing your time and attention on? In Luke chapter 9, verse 51, it says, when the days drew near for him to be taken up, Jesus set his face to go to Jerusalem. He set his face. He resolutely set his face. He focused right on Jerusalem and headed straight there, knowing exactly what was going to happen to him when he got there. as it came about when the days were approaching for his ascension, that he resolutely set his face to go to Jerusalem. Jesus was absolutely determined, all in, totally focused on going to Jerusalem. For what it said, he set his face to go to Jerusalem. Now, let's think about that for a minute. And then think about Isaiah 50, verse 7. The Lord God helps me, so I have set my face like flint, and I will not be ashamed. How determined is this? How determined is Isaiah here? I've set my face like flint, and I will not be ashamed, because I'm following God. Have we set our face like flint to do God's will and to go to heaven? Refusing to be distracted along the way? Philippians 3:14, I press toward the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. Are you pressing on toward that mark? Jesus says in Matthew 25:21, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful in a few things. I'll put you in charge of many things. He didn't say, well done, good and successful servant, did he? He said, well done, good and faithful servant. That's what he calls upon us to do, is be faithful. So let's fix our eyes on Jesus. Be officially sold out to him. Let's be all in for him. Jesus didn't hang on a cross for you to live halfway for Jesus. He died so you could be a sold out, world changing, devil stomping, overcoming warrior for Jesus Christ. What is your determination? Are you determined to be one of those? As J.C. Ryle says, let your Christianity be so unmistakable, your eyes so single, your heart so whole, your walk so straightforward, that all who see you may have no doubt whose you are and whom you serve. Ken's picked a song, Light the Fire. Hopefully the sermon today has lit a fire. May God's Holy Spirit light a fire among us to set our face resolutely, to run the race with patience, looking unto Jesus, not letting anything distract us or turn us aside. Be so focused and so determined, nothing can distract us. Nothing can move us off the mark. And we're going to run so as to win the race and win the crown that God has promised all those who love him. And everybody that sees us will know that's somebody that's going somewhere. That's somebody that's got a purpose in mind. They got a mission. They're. Have you ever noticed, I'll just end with this. Do you ever notice when you're walking down the sidewalk and somebody's kind of walking down the sidewalk kind of like this, you don't think a lot of this. But if somebody's walking like this, then what do you do? Get out of the way. I got someone somewhere. That guy's on the ground. Move out of his way, right? Well, what do we do in Christianity? Are we walking in a way that everybody's, whoa, they're going somewhere. They're on a mission. They're focused. Or are they saying, they're kind of wandering around and seeing what happens next? Which one are you? I hope you're the one that's got the fire lit in you. And if you need to respond to the gospel of Jesus, would you come today? I'll be standing the same to encourage you.